Blog Talk Radio. You have been added to the waiting room. You cannot talk or listen until the host admits you to the meeting. You are muted.
Data.
You can mute or unmute yourself
vast
by pressing
amounts of
star
data,
6.
And you have to be able to process that data. It's not always a financially savvy move to build large data centers. Sometimes it's not even a possibility. But these days, cloud computing has, in a way, democratize the access to those kinds of resources. And then finally, I'll just highlight cybersecurity. Moving into the digital space comes with it a need to secure your data. Data is one of your business biggest assets as a company, and even your customers need to feel that their data, their assets, whether they're digital or physical, are secure. If they're using some sort of digital currency, they want to make sure that the transactions are secure. So we have to start to look at where we are from a cybersecurity perspective in Africa and whether we have the infrastructures in place to be able to kind of secure the project that we are trying to build. And so I'll kind of stop right here, and maybe we could kind of probably delve in a little bit deeper at a later stage into each of these suggestions.
Excellent. Thank you, Tiniso. That was a good, informative information, if we may say so. I know this IT stuff is quite it's quite a challenge to swallow and to grasp. Just an announcement to everybody, those of you that follow us on radio, we have resolved the technicality on that end, so you can call into the radio show and follow the discussion here, although we have made some strides here. Just one basic question to me, so I may begin with, is how connected, how IT connected is Africa, you know, as a whole, in terms of internet, Wi-Fi, whichever terminologies are applicable?
So I can't necessarily give you, I guess, the specifics or the statistics around connectivity, but if you look at it just from kind of from an anecdotal perspective, you'll find that you have tranches or different sectors of society that are connected at different levels. Mm. If you think about the, let's just say the rural Zambian, right, that may live in far-flung areas. We still have a long way to go to get our people online. And that's why I was saying mobile has to be key. That will likely be their first exposure to the internet, especially for, you know, our people in the villages that may have mobile phones, but they may not have a smartphone, for instance.
Yeah.
So there's still a leap to be made from your, you know, your kind of your flip phone handsets to a greater proliferation of smartphones, right? And kind of more simplistic devices that allow you to get onto the internet. But then at the corporate level, I am seeing a lot of promising moves and promising action. You're seeing a kind of a move away from kind of a pay-to-play internet access model to more unlimited data plans. I'm seeing that emerge more and more in Zambia. I've seen a lot more evidence of that. And mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that there's a lot of opportunity. And I think we are pretty widely connected, really, to be honest. But there's still some way to go for us to be able to kind of reap the gains that we'd like to reap
Before I allow others to come in and those who may have other questions about this issue, what type of investment, number one, Tiniso, what type of infrastructure are we talking about to get Africa really to be, let me use the word grid, on the internet grid, okay? Yes. Because nobody is going to deny that it's a great component of development in this era that we are living in. You referenced rural areas, and this shouldn't just be, we can talk about Kenya, rural areas, Uganda, Ghana, Nigeria. Gilbert here will probably comment on that as he deals with the farmers. How technologically up to date is the farming industry in Zambia, if we may say that? But that's not your question. My question to you is, what type of infrastructure and investment will it take for us to get where we're supposed to be?
I think at a bare minimum, I cannot necessarily give you dollar figures, but generally speaking, you would start from, I think, the basics. The basics, you would start with things like physical infrastructure around networking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Networking infrastructure needs to be expanded. You also need to be able even to expand things like the bandwidth of your current networks so that you have your internet is more or less kind of more stable, more reliable. An example I'd give you is right here in the U.S., now that a lot of people have kind of moved out of the office to mm-hmm. working from home due to COVID, there have been some technology or telecoms companies have struggled a little bit trying to adjust because of this increased demand for data, right? And so with that comes an increased requirement for investments in the physical infrastructure to support that demand. There's also an inevitable requirement for an investment in education around the digital mm-hmm. space, right? Demystifying it. I was talking about cyber previously. Most companies put in a lot of money, not only in setting up teams to kind of protect their digital assets, but making sure that people that use their networks, people that use these digital assets, know how to use them responsibly, right? And know how to use them in a secure manner. So there's definitely an investment there. I also talked about ERP systems, being able to kind of manage your data in a logical manner that allows you to be able to kind of strategically plan your business, the growth of your business, and to be able to understand where you are, that will be also a place where businesses themselves have to spend some money. I was looking at what customs, what we've done from a customs perspective, and that's more from a government lens. And I'm seeing that I think we currently have certain systems that are in place that have made the customs clearance process a lot more streamlined. I think they have a system called Asikuda, which most of Africa has adopted. And from the early feedback from that is that it's working really well. And so there's a lot of different points within the whole chain or within the whole landscape that present places where either government or private businesses or even individuals themselves will need to put in either time or money to be able to kind of get up to speed with where we're going.
Don't you think, if I may say so, that shouldn't governments take this as something they should sort of bear the burden for the sake of bringing their citizens up to the current situation? For the sake of development, for the sake of the education system, We've seen what the pandemic has done. It relegated everybody into our homes. And only God knows, we all know what happened in the African situation where the kids simply went home and they just continued on a long holiday, unprecedented holiday. Shouldn't this be a government challenge or responsibility for now until we probably get to that point where the private sector begins to take the responsibility gradually? Mindful, everybody watching and listening, I don't know, like you said, you can't put dollar figures to this also. I'm trying to, you can see I'm shaking my head here, Gilbert, Roger. 60% of Africa, if I may say that, that's an, I don't know how accurate that is. 60% of Africa is probably, internet or Wi-Fi is not something that is priority on their budget. You know what I'm trying to say? Yeah, so don't you think government should take up this and say, I'm not saying it should be free. Bare minimum, like we do the medical insurance, for example, at UTH, just make it a minimum, a little contribution, so to speak, to help with the management or expense of the thing.
I would agree. I think there, one of the realities that we have to contend with is the fact that there could be places in Africa where huge investment by private corporations may not present the economics to justify those kinds of capital outlays. So in such cases, I think it's imperative for governments to be able to kind of identify where those gaps are and make that initial investment, right? Because I think that history has shown us that advancements in terms of digital capabilities pay dividends, continued dividends over time.
Yes.
And so I think government would just have to bite the bullet and make those investments. I do agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
And kind of piggybacking or adding to that, I know we've been talking about digital, but we cannot bypass the need for reliable electricity generation. Right, it doesn't work if you cannot access your digital assets. Right, they're stuck on the web, but you cannot access them due to lack of power. And I think this problem obtains all across Africa. It's a reality in Nigeria. Load shedding is a reality in Zambia. It's a reality even in South Africa. And this is probably one of the primary technologies. It may not be sexy, but it's foundational, and so that definitely has to be addressed. And so you look as we're discussing, you start to see just how much capital needs to be put into getting us to a point where we are able to really leverage these technologies in a way that kind of enhances what we're trying to do.
Yeah, excellent. The issue of power generation and electricity is a whole different subject on itself. Roger, we have an assignment there to find somebody to come and address this. Power generation.
Good discussion there. What this man, while you're speaking, Nathan, I'm just thinking this man needs to be part of government. Gilbert, we need to connect him to advise them. We have Patrick in the chat room. He has a question. Patrick, can you unmute your phone and ask your question? We are discussing the digital infrastructure as far as the Africa continental free trade area is concerned.
Yes. Greetings to everyone on the line. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, yes.
Okay. So I want to say I appreciate this discussion. I appreciate Tanishu in his presentation and what he's brought forth here, and I think it's very important. I had a question for Tanishu and then a comment. Tanishu, how important is planning? Do you think planning is before even embarking on any of this stuff? When I say planning, I mean ideation, thinking of what is it that we're really trying to do at the grassroots level? What are the needs of the people? What are the morals and values of the people? and then build or imagine a perfect system based around a lot of factors, including those things, before we get started. And the reason I'm bringing that question up is because digital transformations and business transformations in North America fail at probably about a 70% rate. And they fail because of improper planning, you know, the goals. A lot of the goals are not understood, although they're set. And so I wanted to ask you about that, because what happens is when we talk technology, everybody wants to run out and just do something.
Yeah.
They just want to build something. They don't have the requirements. They don't have the requirements from the people on the ground. You know, so when we talk about mobile as an example, what do we do with our mobile phone? We connect, we talk with people, and that kind of thing. But what if one of the requirements is, I want to use my mobile phone to make money?
Yeah.
Then you build it. So instead of building a system and trying to fit people into it, imagine the system first, the whole of the society first, and then put together a plan, and then use the technology to do that, and then build and develop the technology around that, as opposed to the other way around, where you're just following other countries and what other people are doing, which may not benefit you at all or much at all.
No, you're absolutely right, Patrick. So I think by and large, I mean, for any technology or any technology implementation to work, you definitely have to start with your basically your business case or your business requirements. What exactly is the stakeholder, or you know, what exactly does the Zambian or the African on the ground need? So while we can list all these technologies and what we can do with them, probably not all of them will be relevant to the African case, right? Mainly because we're speaking in generalities, right? Because we're basically starting to kind of think about the possibilities, right? What are the possibilities that the free trade area would give us or present to us? And I think that the different kinds of use cases that can emerge, the different kinds of uses of existing technologies, we'll start to kind of emerge organically as we start to identify needs as we go. Because even as I look at where we are in terms of planning for the free trade area, there is, in a sense, a lack of specifics today, right? There's some lack in terms of specifics. We know about the legislative actions that need to happen for, you know, that we know that it's been ratified, but we need to still know how these structures would work, right? And as these structures kind of come into being or to start to materialize, we'll start to understand how the economics are changing and how it's affecting the person on the ground, right? The average Zambian, the average African. And then we can start to build technologies as we start to identify their needs. Like as I said, I think when, as we were starting, is that you cannot really start to have a discussion on technology without first understanding the context of the individual that will be using that technology, whether it's a company or whether it's an individual or family. You first have to understand the context and their needs, and then start to build with what you have around those needs and try to bridge the gap. And in the context of trade, we can also only speak of generalities, right? And standard technologies that we have today. But that does not preclude or remove the need for us to look at the possibility of generating new technologies or approaching these problems in new ways that are that fit our African context.
Thank you.
Okay. Patrick, are you done?
Yes, I'm done.
Okay. Very quickly, some of us, Tiniso, are in a hurry. We really want this thing to work. Nathan has been with me forever. He knows, you know, we are one of those people, quick, you have to slow me down. what is the time frame? The trading has started. The infrastructure is not yet ready. To have something working on the ground, IT, now we are connected to Tanzania, we are connected to Nigeria. What is the time frame we are looking at?
Ooh, that's a hard question, Roger, I must admit. Digital transformations are not an easy thing. I think Patrick alluded to that fact. They're not an easy thing. They can be hit or miss. Even the best, kind of best of breed or most experienced organizations or enterprises that embark on digital transformations can lose a lot of money. I've seen cases where companies have lost in the hundreds of millions of dollars on digital transformation projects. You know, and you'll see lawsuits going around between technology companies because it's hard to capture complexity, right?
Yeah.
And invest the appropriate amount of money, time, and talent to address those needs. And so when we're thinking about this, we also have to think about talent. Do we have enough talent to and when I talk about talent, I'm not really talking about credentials in terms of university degrees. I'm talking about talent in terms of actual experience having done such transformations before, because the stakes are extremely high. And so even as I said, with dollar figures, putting a time frame on it is a little bit difficult, because you have to have the willingness. You have to have the willingness to do this. You have to have the commitment in terms of not only will, but also in terms of resources. Resources may not be available to each country at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that also throws in a lot of unknowns into the mix. But if I were to generalize and just kind of off the top of my head throw out a figure, this is 2020, I would throw out a 20 to 25 year time frame.
Oh, come on.
No. So it depends on what your destination is supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
Because you could have medium term, long term. I'm thinking bringing us to a point where we are extremely competitive with the rest of the world.
Okay.
You know, haste. They say haste makes waste, right?
Yeah.
These things are not really built. They're not built overnight. They're when you start to get into the actual weeds and actual details of how to do digital transformations. They're very complex, and just the breadth of skill and depth, the breadth and depth of skill that's required, it's mind-boggling. That's why even here in the U.S., people bring in resources from India, from China. We outsource resources because it's very, you know, it's not a simple undertaking. So, but that's why I wanted to say, we have to kind of simplify and say, what is the bare minimum that we need? What can we do in the next 5 to 10 years to get us from point A to point B? We have to kind of really understand what our metrics of success are. And those metrics of success have to be us, you know, if we're going to from A to Z, we have to be able to say we went from A to H, and that's a success because we did it in such and such a time period, right, with the resources that we had. So we need to set realistic goals that are achievable. And be able to pat ourselves on the back when we hit those goals and you know, make strides towards getting to our destination.
Wow, Nathan, this man, we are going to need you make some connection, be part of the team. I hear Zambia is doing well. They were mentioned in some video, Nathan, how they've created a committee for the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Well,
okay.
you take a break. Thank you so much, but don't go away. I'm sure there will be other people who want to come and ask some questions. Next, we'll be going to Gilbert Moire. Gilbert Moire is the CEO of InSeeker, as you can see from my background. I'm actually going to be charging him for advertising to our millions of viewers that Imsika.com is online platform. He buys and sells agricultural products. So he's going to share with us, Nathan, agriculture and technology. But before we do that, take it over, Nathan. I prepare a video which I found on his website. Okay. Those of you who have brewers back home who want to advertise to the diaspora, you're going to see how these people have done this nice video. Please send it over to us. We are going to charge you akamtengo akanonos. Over to you, Nathan.
Yes, that's good. We're making some headway here, and our on the radio part of things, we are back live, and we do thank our radio audience for staying with us. Please forgive us for those technical challenges. Let me just do a little test here. Alan, good morning. Can you hear us loud and clear?
Good morning. Yes, I can hear you. Loud and clear. I was wondering where we were.
Okay, Alan, can't hear us. But,
Alan can't hear us.
Hello. Yeah, no, I can hear.
Okay, we'll cross. Let's play a small video. We'll send Alan a message. A small video.
No,
video
is about Roger.
Team Seeker, an online
Roger.
Platform in
Roger.
Zambia. Have a look.
Roger.
Are you an agriculture farm input supplier of grain seed, vegetable seed, crop protection chemicals, implements, and livestock? Sell more and faster. With eMusika.com, the number one place where farmers can find you is the best online presence for you to be. And if you're a farmer, tired of spending a lot of time and money to just find, buy, and transport farm inputs, your struggles are over, as eMusika is here to help you do all that from the comfort of your home. Go to our website, eMusika.com, or call 0976-62-6406, or email us on sales@eMusika.com. eMusika, simplifying business.
Okay, that is a $500 advertisement right there. Let's bring our...
Don't kill him before you...
Yes. Welcome, Gilbert. Please go ahead and mute yourself. Go ahead, share with us your business. And then we'll follow from there.
All right. Thank you very much for having me here. I appreciate both Mr. Nkama, Nathan, and also Mr. Roger Charlie. It's a pleasure to be here. Well, as Mr. Charlie mentioned, my name is Gilbert Mwale. I'm CEO and co-founder of eMusika. Probably if you ask me how many things or what am I would probably just put it up into these. I'm a pastor, which means I minister the word of God. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a lecturer as well at the University of Lusaka, where I teach computer science. And as I am a computer scientist, and as well, I am an author. I've written a book titled Developing the Genius in You. And simply, again, some again for Mr. Charlie there. I run a company called eMusika. And I would like to talk about, you know, what it does and how it does what it does. So we are an agri-tech company, and agri there obviously meaning agriculture, technology infused in there. So we are simply digitizing processes and activities in the agricultural space. The first problem that we solved, we realized that there are four problems. Now I'd like to mention that I was born in the eastern part of Zambia, which is Chipata, to be specific, neighbor with Malawi, and I grew up there for almost about 18 years of my life until I finished my high school and went into university and the likes. From there, I moved into the capital city. But what you must understand is that in that whole entire time, I grew up as a farmer, and there are some problems that we experienced as a family, and also are still available up until now, even after so many years of probably independence. for, you know, like almost 50 years of independence, those problems have not gone away. So when I finished my studies in India in Masters in Computer Science, I used certain technologies that I realized with my partner that were quite helpful for us. So instead of staying there, we decided to come back and start, you know, revolutionizing the way things are done by our own relatives. So the first problem we solved was access to agricultural inputs. So the diversified options of you being able to buy different kind of agricultural inputs that you may need. As I would mention quickly is that when I was in Eastern Province, we only grew two things. We grew maize and we grew tobacco. And primarily the main reason was simply because there was nothing else we could easily get, or rather affordably find. So what we tried to do is, first of all, deal with the problem of access to a diversified list of agricultural inputs. So with our online marketplace, which is IMSICA, imsica.com, you'd be able to find multiple suppliers who are mainly based in the capital city. We are exposing them to the farmers across the country who may need their products. Farmers will be able to find the product they're looking for, pay for it, and have it delivered to the town where they are. The second solution that we actually came to handle was a problem that we noticed that farmers were experiencing, which is the challenge of access to information and knowledge on how to farm rightly. So you find that people, which causes them to, you know, to probably reduce on productivity and therefore making losses on their farming activities. So we decided to create an e-learning platform called apunzile.com, which simply means let them learn. Apunzile, we simply put that as a mulimi apunzile, which is let the farmer learn. So with that platform, we are creating trainings. You can think of it as a Udemy of agriculture, where we are able to curate a lot of content on how to grow this, how to keep that, how to, you know, probably learn how to handle markets before you get into farming. All that is to be able to train a farmer to learn how to farm as a business, because every farmer is an entrepreneur by default, whether they know it. So that was the second problem. And now we are solving the problem of markets, which is probably to be able to help a farmer again, once they have bought the inputs, grow them rightly, or kept them rightly, how do they get back on the market to go and sell the produce that they have. The final problem that we are working on is the issue of financial inclusion, which is to be able now to come back and assist that small-scale farmer that is not able to actually grow their output by, you know, assisting them with things like probably a loan or insurance or anything like that, that could boost them, you know, so that they can be able to one day dream of becoming a commercial farmer. So these are some of the things that we are tying in into our solution. And I'd like to just quickly comment over one or two things that were asked to Tiniso, which I think he answered very, very well. And I actually I was just amazed at how some of the points were brought out. Number one, I'd like to bring in the issue when it comes to the issue of the AFTA agreement that Africa is getting into and has gotten into, and most especially Zambia. One of the things we need to begin to realize is that before we even talk about this, digital has no borders. That's the first issue that I would like to bring out. Digital has no borders. So before even this AFTA agreement was brought up, we still adopted the use of WhatsApp here in Zambia and have made the owners of WhatsApp rich. Before AFTA was created, we still adopted Facebook here in Zambia, and the owners of Facebook have been made rich. And so many other tools out there. So the first problem I would like to bring back to all of us as we push the AFTA with the mindset of thinking about the commodities, like, you know, issues like groceries and these other commodities that need to be manufactured. Please let us remember that we may be also fighting for a partially old age kind of commerce, which as we are speaking right now, our friends have moved over and are actually benefiting from what is called the knowledge economy. And this is where we need to also take advantage that as we are pushing the old one to get to pace, let us make sure that we are also sharing knowledge and making sure that those who need to learn about what is called the knowledge economy can also be able to understand how it works. How do I build a solution that today can be bought and used in the U.S. without me opening any retail outlet that site? So these are the concerns that probably we also may want to think about as we do this. I would like to mention the reason why I was so glad to be joining you as my last statement on this platform, and I'm very honored to have been invited here, is that our solutions, both IMSICA and Aponzile, are very open to everybody across the world. You, most especially for those who are Zambians, for the e-commerce side, if you are a Zambian and you're into farming back home, and you're probably concerned with the last few transactions you have done where you do not get receipts and you do not get exact information over how your transactions are happening, over the fertilizer, the maize seed, the agrochemicals you are buying, the machinery you are buying, you could use this platform, make a transaction, and all the family here would see is probably the product that we are shipping in. And lastly, on the training side, you as well, before participating in any farming activity, can actually educate yourself on how that, you know, activity works. If you want to know, if you want to get into growing of chili, why don't you educate yourself how chili is grown, most especially here, and then jump in. With those few things said, thank you very much. And if there are any questions, I'll probably wait.
There are a lot
thank
of
you.
Questions. There are a lot of questions. Roger.
All right, good.
First, let me say this, that I'm very proud of this pastor.
Yeah.
He doesn't just speak in tongues. He's right there in the middle of things. I like pastors like him. These are the pastors we need in Zambia and in Africa,
thank
for
you,
that
sir.
Matter.
Thank
you,
okay, having said that,
I have a comment.
Just Mr. Charlie. I wanted to shed some light on two important questions you asked, Tiniso. And I think I being here, obviously, I probably have some better light to actually add on what he said, to you know, probably add some meat concerning what Mr. Nathan asked concerning how is the infrastructure right now for technology, for us to be able to embrace digital, most especially in Zambia and Africa across. And probably there was also a question that you had asked, the last question that you asked, Mr. Nathan, concerning how much would be required for us to do this. And I would like to agree with Tiniso that, yes, 10, 15, 20 years is a good space that he actually mentioned. But I would like to say that here's the thing. Number one, liquid. We had three organizations before. We had MTN. Zamtel has always been there, MTN, and also Airtel. These three were pushing, these are MNOs, telcos, who are helping make sure that we have the ability to call each other, the ability to text each other, and as well, also bring internet to us. So with these three players initially, some 3 to 4 years ago, being the only ones in the space, the speed at which internet was penetrating was very low. Even the speed of the internet itself was quite poor. But we see probably some 3 to 4 years ago, the entrance of two organizations. Number one is Vodafone. As soon as Vodafone enters, they are denied the license for calls, for voice, but they are given data. And because of that, they went hard on data. And that reduced the cost of data prices in Zambia to ridiculous amounts, whereby almost anyone right now with a 5 kwacha, 2 kwacha, you can be able to go on the internet and browse on Facebook or anything like that. That's number one. Then number two is that as Vodafone was coming in, there was also the entrant of Liquid Telecom and Hive. And Liquid Telecom did that in conjunction with what is called CEC. And CEC is a Zambian company. Liquid is a South African-based company owned by Strive Masiyiwa, and who's a Zimbabwean. But what we see is that CEC is Copperbelt Energy Corporation. They entered into a memorandum of understanding, and the idea was that since CEC is laying ground fiber cables, they might as well use the same fiber cables to push the internet that is actually supposed to come in. So with that joint venture, we have seen a connection of homes and companies to fiber cable. And I would like to also add that they have gone on as Liquid. There has been a separation now. CEC is by themselves, and Liquid has moved on by themselves as Hive. But what they have done is that they have pushed that fiber cable all the way from from Cairo to Cape Town, and it's running through the whole entire Africa. So meaning that they knew that this was coming. You know, they knew that this was coming. And as I'm speaking, last week, Strive Masiya was making a big a big pronouncement to say that they just finished installing cables in the forests of Congo. Now you know the situation in Congo. But what they had to do is that they had to, because it's a thick forest, they had to put the cables in the electricity wires above there. So that means that they are connected. In Zambia, you mentioned the issue. You asked a question concerning, should we be having the government dealing with this issue? Well, yes and no. Yes, because they need to be able to participate as being parents of the nation. They need to foster for opportunities. But also, I also think that it is also our responsibility as private institutions to come in and do what we need to do. As one of the things that I'm actually happy about is that there has been an entrance of an organization called IHS. And it is an organization like that handles the installation of towers. Because initially the towers were being installed by Zamtel, and they were doing it at a very slow rate, causing people in very rural areas not to even have normal 2G calling abilities. Now, with the coming in of IHS, what you realize is that IHS is doing it as a private institution, but in conjunction with these three MNOs, the towers are being installed like flies. And what that has done is that it is making calls even into rural areas, as Tiniso had mentioned, you know, the issue of, you know, small feature phones are being used, and the small feature phones now have the ability to go to certain level of internet. So it is also the ability that the question that I think it was Mr. Patrick, where we build solutions that are able to respond to that level of technology, the tools that the people on the ground are actually able to use. So I just wanted to give us the understanding, and from some of the statistics of internet, we're starting with the population being at 17 million. You have got 13 million people who have got phones. At least 13 to 15 million have got SIM cards. Those could be double SIM cards also, but at least they have phones. Then you're talking about 5 million having access to the internet, and probably those are the ones who have smartphones as well. So that is just some information I wanted to just share there for Zambia to be specific.
Good stuff. All right, my brother, go ahead. Africa Evolve.
Thank you very much for having me here. My name is Clint Zombato. I'm the president of Africa Evolve, co-founder, and also Moringa 10, and also we do training for farmers in Zambia, and we have an online platform that we train farmers across Africa for especially Moringa production, and also for the marketing of Moringa and for the selling of Moringa in North America, US, and Canada. Mm-hmm. I'm based in Canada right now, but I work pretty much across the globe. Across, especially Africa. Africa has always been in my heart. My early days in the 80s, I trained missionaries, African missionaries, to travel in the country, and one of my job was to provide independence for them, make sure that they are completely independent from Western donors, and so that we can create income and generate income from that. So what we did in the 80s and the 90s was to provide a platform where these local churches can organize themselves in agriculture. They don't need money at all to do that. All they need is to get seed. Once they get seed, I'll teach them how to do that. They need to get a little bit of chicken here, cows here, this and that, donation. They get donation. And they can start a very beautiful sort of a comprehensive agriculture. With 3 acres of land, an individual, a missionary with a family of 6 can actually generate up to $10,000 a month. Out of income, and with 1 cow, and we're able to sort of do that successfully in some countries, especially some of the countries that we worked with. But I think over the years, what had happened was that I wasn't able to sustain it because there was too much work for me. So I moved to Canada, and over the years have been traveling in different countries to see how I can work in refugee camps across the continent to see how we can foster that relationship. Now, having said all this, and haven't heard, I've hosted a lot of the Zoom meetings and talked to business, people within the continent in Africa. I think the problem that I'm having right now is that I have a company now in Canada and US. We have a couple of companies and we've organized ourselves. Is that we don't have a reliable partner in Africa. Let me just zoom down straight to Zambia, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I did train farmers in Zambia on how to grow moringa. Right now, I have a program that is coming on how to train farmers on how you can, if you have like one cow, you can actually reproduce and get a lot of stuff. So my goal right now is to sort of build partnership in the sense that I have sent a list of resources that we need from Zambians. African food, whatever at all that you have. One is that we need to do an SPA, that is a sale purchase agreement. Two, we need to enter into an MOU with a Zambian farmer. I don't care who the farmers are, but they need to sort of organize themselves. The farmers need to sort of come together and organize themselves and form a union, a cooperative, and so that we can create sort of what is known as a value chain. Now, if we have a value chain in operative in every agriculture, you know, what I tell my student farmers is that 10% is farming, 90% is actually the business of agriculture. Because a farmer produces, you know, anybody can go to the farm. Our grandparents were growers. They were not farmers. They were just growers. They grow, they send us to the bush, and we go in and we farm. You know, I had, you know, growing up in Nigeria, we had cattle, we had everything. You know, there was no hunger in the village. There was only hunger in the cities. Those of people that were migrating into big cities, that was there you find hunger. But the villages in Africa, in Zambia, for example, right now, we need to organize them in the sense that we produce, we have this produce that we can sort of make sure that they don't spoil. That is, mm-hmm. we can store them properly. We can provide. That alone is a value chain. So you have the growers.
Let's do this.
We have the growers, and then we have the growers, and then we have those two harvesting. We have specialists that do their work is just to go and harvest it. We supply them with the infrastructure for harvesting. This has to be done completely private sector based.
No, of course, yeah. Let's do this, my brother. Due to time constraint,
I will arrive at this so that we can put some things into reality now. If I have one container or two containers coming in from Zambia every month, I'm willing to put 50% of the cost so that we can share 50-50. I have a company. My son runs a company here in Canada, and we can send invitations so that you can come to Canada and you can be part of the whole process. I have stores here that I sell. Right now I don't have food. I don't have any African food to sell.
Okay, so you're looking for food.
We have a problem. Mm-hmm. We have a problem in Nigeria. We couldn't do that because the infrastructure in Nigeria is terrible. So I'm training farmers. I can train all kinds of farmers in terms of keeping into the value chain. You know, if you have one cow or two cows or whatever cattle, number of cattle, I can train you on how you can become sustainable in terms of creating a value chain on how you can sell all the products without actually necessarily exporting just the raw material. Because what we need to stop doing right now is stop exporting raw material.
Of course. Yes. That's why
we need to keep it into the value chain.
So my
training is 3 weeks crash program. 3 weeks crash program gives the farmer the basic understanding of, and then the network to which you can actually sell food within Africa and then in North America.
Excellent.
Right now we need moringa. We need a lot of moringa because of the pandemic. So we need to have a pandemic and post-pandemic programs for food banks in Africa. Our ancestors did that successfully in the continent of Africa. There was no starvation in the 1800 or in the 1700 in the continent of Africa because our people survived, medically, our people survived. There was no any problem that the Africans were not able to solve in terms of...
Okay, my brother, I think you've given us enough...
So, the last point that I want to...
Hold on.
Okay.
I think you've given us enough to work with.
Okay.
Like, Nathan, I think, wanted to tell you, we need to schedule just a show for you.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. We will invite you. Don't worry about
that. We need a show with you. Just with you.
I don't know if you wanted to ask him a question. Now you are giving us a presentation. So we are not lost, but you know where you are.
The other thing we need to do from
Gilbert, don't go into describing, but I don't know. I think Gilbert has heard enough. Any comments, Gilbert, from what our brother Africa has
done?
This is what we need. We need my brother, by the way. We need the diaspora to be opening up markets.
Yeah.
For our people back
home. No, we have the market. We just
very,
don't have
very,
just
very
don't have
true.
The,
and I agree with him. And if you look at, I've sent you my email on Zoom, Africa Evolve. Sorry, we're calling you that because you.
That's fine.
It's not there.
You can go to our website and check what we're doing. You can go to our website.
Not a problem. I've shared my email with you on Zoom. If you want to reach out, you could actually do that. So first of all, I'd like to agree with you, and I'd like to simply say that if you look at the services, the four things I mentioned that we are looking at answering to, you realize that they suit in exactly with what you've said, because as a value chain, what you notice is that for items to leave Zambia, to be specific, to get into any other country, there are certain, you know, quality levels and quantities that also, you know, you mentioned if two containers could be leaving, you know, that's a quantity amount that probably would need to be taught to a certain group of farmers, which means there's a portion of bulk buying that needs to be happening on this other side, you know, coordinating these efforts and aggregating products that are coming from farmers. So it's a process. And that is why if you look at what we've done in the last 4 years, because we've been in existence for 4 years as an organization, and in the last 4 years, the first thing we did is that we created a clear cycle of how farm inputs can be bought by a small-scale farmer, any type. So that if you're looking at getting into aquaculture, which is fish farming, you're looking at getting into potatoes, any kind of farming that you want to get into anywhere in Zambia, you should be able to do that painlessly. But while that is happening, we then realize that, you know, when we're talking about where these farmers are going to sell these products that they're going to sell, we're talking about diaspora, which is like Africa Evolve. We're talking about places like the chain stores, you know, the ShopRite right now, the Pick and Pay, and all these places, because they're trying to go away from unconventional markets like what we call Soweto Market here in Zambia. Now, if you are going to move away from that, automatically, the moment you want to go into a shelf of a chain store, somebody wants to see value, somebody quality, they want to see issues like consistency, they want to see all these things, and hence the e-learning, the introduction of the e-learning portal, where these things can be taught. And when you're talking about Moringa, I would like to welcome you. That's why I sent you my email to say, if you are ready to make that training, we will probably put it there. The training remains yours. You can make money out of it right there while sitting in Canada, and people will be trained here, and there will be that synergy. The goal is to solve these problems step by step without crying over who's not doing it on our side here. So we're more than ready to work with you or anybody out there who would like to make a change on this side. Thank you.
Follow-up question, Gilbert, on your presentation. Access. Last time I talked to you, some people on this radio, they know me as an anti-Lusaka guy. So always I want to speak for the guy in Lundazi. I want to speak for the guy in Chavuma. How accessible is your platform to these guys?
Other very good question that I have received quite heavily for a very long time, and I always get excited when I hear it, because you know, we are very accessible. We have come to understand, like I said, remember, I didn't grow up here in Osaka. I'm just here, and one of the reasons why we take advantage of what's going on is that you realize that 90% of the agricultural suppliers or manufacturers of farm inputs in Zambia are in Lusaka. So if you are going to be able to actually push items or help farmers find the items they need on a cost-effective way, you have to be here, first of all, as a base to actually connect with these suppliers and inform them that they are needed by people out there. Once you convince them, which is what we have done, we roughly, maybe just to give some statistics in the last 4 years of what we've been able to do, we have roughly about 15 to 16 suppliers, big suppliers, out of the five top suppliers in Zambia, four of them are already on our platform. That's number one. Number two, we work with we have worked so far. We have saved close to about 2,500 farmers, and these are both in urban, peri-urban, and in rural areas. So what we have done to solve that problem of access, Mr. Charlie, is that we have added a mini call center that allows someone to actually call in, just dial in or simply send a text message and requesting for items they need, and we'll get back to them, give them the prices of what they need. They'll make payment using mobile money, as Tiniso mentioned, and transactions will be done, and products will be picked up from the supplier and pushed to the farmer wherever they are, in which town they are. So the good part is that these are the things that, you know, like, you know, I'm anti-partisan. For me, I simply stick to the fact that, you know, the private sector must cover certain areas and the government must as well. One of the things I'm happy about is that roads have been made, and these roads are going to so many places in Zambia, and there are very few places we can't deliver items to as of now. So we literally go all the way into Mwandi, that is beyond Livingstone, into Sesheke down that side. We go out all the way to Kasumbalesa. We are able to deliver, which is beyond Chirawombwe. We are able to go all the way into Lundazi and Chama, as long as a client has heard about us on radio, because we know that that's the easiest way that they are able to hear about us. Radio is the way. So we are in those, some of those local radio stations. And once they hear about us, the first thing they do is they call back, they inquire, and we give them the information. So we cater for those as well, because remember, that's where my relatives are as well. So I wouldn't be solving a problem for people that I just I'm with here in Lusaka. I'm solving a problem for my own relatives as well at the village.
You see, Gilbert, for me, the reasoning that we should adopt here is, I like the phrase you use, that digital has no borders. One of the things that we need to, the yeah. way we need to start doing business is, the people that you mentioned in Lundazi, they are my relatives. They shouldn't worry about taking their products to Lusaka. They should take it to Malawi, Mozambique, and those, you see what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely.
I think that
I
is
100%.
I think Absolutely. That's one of the greatest aspects of this Africa continental free trade area. We are no longer thinking borders, like the video clip that Roger played. We are no longer thinking about Zambia's population is 14 million, whatever it is. Our mindset now is, we are the 1.2 billion population market. Customers, my brother, that's the word. So that's the way we should be thinking.
That's the way we think now.
Yeah. Even that small little farmer, Kulundazi, Kumuami, you've mentioned, Sesheke, my relatives in Choma, where Dr. Musanje comes from. Those people should stop thinking Lusaka.
Right.
They should start thinking Zimbabwe,
right.
Mozambique, and those areas.
And
we talked
Angola
about this last week. Angola, thank you. Both living in Minilunga and all those places. So we have about 32 minutes here left. First of all, let's find out. Roger, Alan, Dr. Patrick, can you hear us? Are you there? Please say something.
I can hear you. I don't know if you can hear me. I think I can
hear
you.
You can hear us. You're really listening up.
Yeah, the people that are calling
yes,
from the radio
you.
Show.
I can hear you.
Somebody, let's continue the discussion here. Those of you that have questions, please indicate that you'd like
yeah,
to.
Yeah, those are on the radio next week. Please, if you want to be participating in this, you can call just as we call in radio. The number is 1-929-209-6099. That is the new number to call for the radio. You don't need to be on video. You can just be in your pajamas. Just call the number 1-929-205-6099. And our code, our ID code, is the usual radio number, 319-527-6219. Gilbert, the diaspora are listening today. And tell us, what is the product you think would be attractive, number one, to us, the diaspora, and how we can use your platform, probably to give you some business. Talk to us.
Perfect. Thank you very much for sharing that. The first thing I would like to say is that if you are not in Zambia right now, I would like to say that the first thing you want to do before you get into farming, or even if you have done some form of farming, is educate yourself around the kind of farming you want to do. That's the first thing, because you will not know whether somebody is doing the right thing or not back home, be it your auntie, uncle, young brother, nephew, son. You will not know whether they're in the right path. If they tell you, I need 2 bags of fertilizer for the field that you want me to plow, how do you know whether they are lying or not when you have never done any form of farm? You have not done that farming, that particular kind of farming before. You hear that at this point in time, there is a boom in the growing of fish and aquaculture, and you want to jump in because you do know that the dollar value right now with the kwacha is quite higher, so probably it'll be cheaper for you to put up fish ponds and probably get into that business than somebody who's locally here. But my advice would be, before you do that, what you'd like to know is that, because we call it remote farming. Now, you know, if somebody who is in Zambia itself is not going to their own farm, they are very liable to, there's a huge susceptibility of being swindled themselves. What about someone who is outside Zambia, who they know that you're not going to be able to come in physically on a regular basis? So my advice is, first of all, go to our e-learning platform, apunzile.com, which is apunzile.com, and learn something. Participate in a training. We teach you from there, first of all. We make sure that trainers are showing you issues about the market, what requirements are there for that kind of farming, and as well, what's the management of that farming type, and what are the results? How do you harvest? How does it look like? What should you expect from that kind of farming activity? Once you understand that, then I would suggest that, you know, you can now shift to our marketplace, the trading platform, where we allow farmers to be able to buy agricultural inputs. So where you are there, we are going to be launching a new version of our system that is in the next 1 to 2 weeks, and that would allow you to actually do as you do on Amazon, where you are able to buy a gift voucher on behalf of somebody. So right now you could actually go in, log in, buy items. When you are checking out, you can pay online using your bank account right there, wherever you are in the world. The payments are global as well. Like I said, digital has no borders. So payment options that are being used right now, there will be no fraud. These are secured payments, and you will definitely be safe as you are doing that. Your information about your card details is not sitting on our account. And we are an entity. Let me just mention this, because sometimes people think about the .com situation of, you know, a website existing somewhere and a guy with a briefcase who does not exist anywhere. So we are an existing entity registered under ZBA, registered under PACRA, registered under ZRA. We pay our taxes. And as well, we have got a physical office here in Lusaka. So you could actually come and look for us. If you go on our website, you find our details. So I want to assure you that you can actually do your farming remotely. While that side, simply tell us what you want to get. Go on the portal, pick up the items, add them to the cart, make the payment, but add the location of your relatives or wherever the location you want them to go here in Zambia, and you run that transaction. So I would like to say that these things are available. You know, we talk about them, I know, because I've been abroad before, and we talk about them out there, but I would like to say that they are here, and you could actually do that. Thank you.
Two questions, Roger. One for Gilbert, one for Tini. So, Gilbert, how do we stop or kill that fish importation from China?
Well, policies, first of all, and then secondly, can we be able to satisfy the local market ourselves? So I'll connect that to what just happened a few weeks ago. We used to import a lot of potatoes and things like that. It was policy changed. It was banned. No, it's not allowed anymore for you to get that. The next question that comes after is, do we have the capacity now by the people in the country to be able to fulfill the needs of the chain stores, the small restaurants, the big restaurants, the hotels? Do we have enough people producing enough potatoes to do that? So for me, what I usually think about with these issues is that, first of all, we as a people need to grow our capacity and understand that fish farming, these are the things that, so there are silos. What is going on right now through what is called the CEEC, which is the Citizen Economic Empowerment Commission, they have realized that they need, there's a very small commitment of Zambians in the area of aquaculture. So they have sent out calls, and as I'm speaking, people are being made to make fish farms at the riverbanks, and others are just being made to do them across the nation. Now, the idea there is obviously, how do we increase production of the fish before we can stop it from coming in? Because fish is important for our dietary needs. So for me, the critical issue always comes in, before we make a decision to close something, let us grow capacity. Let us be able to fulfill the needs of the Zambians ourselves. So I think that comes with knowledge, that comes to access to the raw materials, and it also comes with access to market. Thank you, Mr. Nathan, for the question.
Okay. Go ahead. If you are in the chat room and you want to ask a question, yeah, send it to us. We can either read it, or you can just unmute yourself, raise your hand, and we'll allow you to ask either Tinicio a question or Gilbert Mali. Any comment, Tinicio, you may have?
I was actually thinking about this specifically around what they call transshipment fraud. You know, once the free trade area comes into being, I do see the possibilities of some actors outside of the African Union finding ways and means to get their products into Africa free of customs. And so that will probably be kind of an opportunity to kind of explore technologies to understand what's referred to as countries of origin or rules of origin. That's probably going to be one of, from a customs or from a international trade perspective, that will probably be one of the key problems that African governments will have to contend with. I'm seeing some progress specifically in the blockchain space that tries to address issues around verifying the authenticity, especially in terms of where goods, trying to figure out where the goods actually originate from. But as with most of these things, they're still kind of in development and whatnot. But those are some of the things that we have to keep our eyes on. There's a huge risk of dumping of goods,
oh, yeah.
You know, through different kinds of schemes.
Yeah.
There are some risks for our businesses, without a doubt.
You have talked about open across the world, Gilbert. The internet, the digital world is open across the world. Thinking about your training, what you are doing, how are you positioning yourself with the coming of after, or it's not yet there, it doesn't sink in. Where are you? Because it sounds quite global, and Africa can really benefit from what you are doing, and our brother, the other brother, Africa, something talked about.
Well, I mean, I have. We have taken time to understand how the Africa Free Trade Area does look into our how it looks for our business, and also where can we be able to play in? Because right now, as we speak, what you see as one of the bigger costs, obviously, is the import and export activity. There, we have a site. We definitely currently have a site challenge. Obviously, the costs of those things. And as well, the paperwork, which I think you mentioned that there has been installations of softwares like Asecoda, which are making things better. But otherwise, what happens is that products get to stay longer on the borders than they are supposed to. And obviously, if these rules are brought into play fully, that could probably reduce. Probably could just be looking at issues of making sure that, you know, issues like the origin issue has been dealt with. But at the end of the day, you are not going through the whole entire process of trying to make payment, trying to do all these things. You know to say, look, we are clearly going to pass through. It could take a day. So you could easily understand, you know, the cycle of your business much better. Right now, you go to the border, you may take 2 days, you may take 1 week, you may take 3 weeks. Anything is possible. Now, a customer is waiting on the other side. So that becomes a challenge. So for us, we look at it as saying it will make it easier for us to do business with our neighbors, because our intentions are to obviously expand into our origin, into our region, first of all, which is our 8 neighbors. With Zimbabwe having a strong interest in our services, and Tanzania as well, and Congo. So the idea is, how do we expand in those areas? It will become easier when the Africa Free Trade Area comes into play. I do agree with that, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that is going to happen. And apart from that, I like what Mr. Nathan has mentioned, which is to say that the bulk transactions we would have done for the farmers locally don't have to always come to Lusaka. We could also look at how they could go to the nearest neighbor where markets as well exist. So that is a good thing as well. So I take note of that one and I'll put it down. But clearly for us, it's the expansion that was being impeded by these borders and rules around the borders that was making us slowly, you know, just stick into our areas. But right now, I think we definitely are looking forward to them opening. I think for us, it's an advantage at the end of the day.
All right. Otherwise, I don't know if we have any more. We had planned for 4, so our time slot was given for 4 presentations, but you guys have done a marvelous job. So you have work to do in Zambia. You need to link up with you, but it's scary. We talk about 20 years. I'm scared about hearing 20 years, but that is the reality. But to hear the small increment, like you put it, where you have a small increment from A, B, C, D, you celebrate that achievement.
Yes.
Then you move from there, and as long as someone was saying, as long as you know that you have made some success from A to not Pamupende, if I'm going to Pamupende, Murero, if I'm going to Ndapo, in 2021, from 2020, 2019, Murero, Paris Mofil. That is no good. We need to talk about the Rwanda opportunity to Chimong, if you never opportunity to Chimong. You move, you see a Pangakoka, the movement. Like us, we are moving from radio to TV. You feel of
TV.
Yeah.
That's a quick one, Mr. Chari.
Yes,
I wanted to just make an appeal, you know, probably to people out there. You know, one of the challenges we have seen here, most especially in Zambia, is the development of solutions that are over the top, and we hear it as well quite extensively from everybody here that is why they have not, their use case has not been very helpful for the people on the ground. The bigger problems lie there that need to be solved. Number one is what information, which is the cloud, which is data, the where do we hold data, that has to improve in Zambia. Number two is logistics. So logistics has been something that is uncoordinated in Zambia. It's there. There are so many trucks, there are so many vehicles, there are so many things, but they are not coordinated. And that makes e-commerce and the rest of these activities become very difficult to do. And then the other thing as well is the issue of payments. So payments, again, some of them are in silos. Other organizations even make sure that they do not integrate to others so that they can, you know, keep the monopoly or keep the control of their users. So the moment we see payments talking to each other more, that even makes things even better for everybody. Now, this is from mobile all the way to banks. That becomes good. Then the last one, which I want to agree very fully again with Tiniso, is the issue of electricity. We need to see off the grid kind of solutions, which is solar power and all that coming in full force. When we see these four things fully done, I think the rest will be built on top of that. And this is where the 2015, 20 years is coming from, Mr. Charlie, because the problem is that everybody is trying to deal with the cosmetic problems, but these are the real issues. That if somebody sort of, and I don't think we can point at the government for all these things here. It's for us. Where can we also come in? That's my submission.
The government should just give us the enabling environment, as you say.
Yeah, I appreciate just the fact that there's peace. The fact that I don't have to hide in my house is good enough.
This is that the food in the house, that is the not peace.
But
I don't want to get the food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is just as much. Thank you. She were here, we are going to share the, she wants your details. So we'll share your details. I don't know if you can put your email in the
chat room.
Yeah. There was Dr. Musanje, if you had a question, please.
Patrick has a comment. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Patrick or Dr. Musanje. Dr. Musanje, you have a comment? You are on mute.
Unmute yourself, my brother from morning.
This thing of coming from Macha is a problem. Well, I've enjoyed the discussions today. I just want to say that this Africa, is whatever you call it, free trade.
Continental free trade, yes.
Oh, yeah. I still have difficulty to remember.
I know.
You know, but it's a great thing. And but the question to the presenters, which I have, is where can we in the diaspora, how can we be part of it? I know that Roger, of all the people, Roger knows why I'm talking about that. Because that we can participate in a small way to make this happen.
Okay. Gilbert, you answered my question, I think, in a different way. This is why Mutanje is also coming back with almost the same question. How can we participate? I'm not sure if you understand our angle. Okay, let's talk in terms of investment. If a member of the diaspora wants to be part of your team, is there a room, number one, for investment in your company? What is the benefit there?
Well, thank you very much for asking that. And thank you for clarifying, Mr. Charlie, that this is what this question means. because you see, the thing is that, so yes, we have, these are entities, and I should say that one of the biggest things, I represent several institutions, and because I didn't come for that, so I didn't mention them. I happen to be an ambassador for an organization, community, which is connected to ITC, which is International Trade Center, based, I think, should be in Switzerland or so. So what we do right now is that in conjunction with another organization, a local entrepreneurship hub called Jacaranda Hub Innovation Challenge. And in there, because I have a kind of bias with teacher institutions, we went for students because we always hear the cry that our education system is wrong, our education system has got problems, that is why it doesn't produce the right people. So we went for the schools, for the students. How do we begin to foster entrepreneurship for them as well as we are doing? Now, I have not forgotten your question. I just want to bring in something in totality. In totality. So I'd like to say that, so we are training these young people and taking them through what is called incubation mentorship connections, and then finally a demo day where they can actually pitch. And we hope that out of this, we are going to be getting a cream of people that can become active both in creating technology and also hardware-related solutions that can be used in their local provinces across, which means that we are beginning to create a group of people that understand the need of business, enterprising, and as well would need to get investment. The problem that we're currently experiencing in Zambia is that there is no angel networks. They are very, very weak. I've been doing a study of an organization from Germany, and we are trying to look at how what are the investors that we could actually work with, for example, even as IMSICA. One of the things we have found is that Zambia has a very poor network of angel networks, and what that leads to is that there are very few young businesses that are able to go past their doorstep in their home. Now you see that right now we are celebrating what is this? We're celebrating Nigeria, right? Nigeria just had another organization enter unicorn status, which is what is called Flutterwave. That was before they had Paystack, which was bought by Stripe from the US. Then we had Jumia, which was IPO'd right there in the US. All these three companies are from Nigeria. Why? Because they have got a group of Nigerians right there, others in the diaspora, who are called angels, who are simply giving money, some of them, for very little equity in the business, as little as 5%. They are giving their $10,000 to this young person to say, look, I believe in this idea and dream that you have, and I'm not going to pressurize you. Here is what you're going to use to start. Build your technology, hire the first key engineer in your business, the resources that Tinito was talking about, and let them grow your business in the first year. Let's see what comes out of that. Now, if this young person was able to convince you, a fellow Zambian, to invest $10,000, then it means that an extra person out there who is not of the same skin, who is an institution, will be able to say, I'm willing as well to put in my money. So I say yes. We are available for investment, and so are so many other SMEs that I'm connected to. So I would like to open up a conversation right now to Charlie to say that I would like to become that bridge, if that is possible, that there's a group of people in here who you feel that there is a certain level of investment that you want to start pushing back to fellow Zambians. I can connect us. I'll give you a quick example. There's a company called... If you're writing down, you could check these two things. There are two companies here. Number one, it was called Zipos, which is ZPOS. The second company was called Musanga, which is MUSUNGA. Zipos and Musanga. These are small businesses that started out just like us. Mm. Then there's a group of Zambians who came from the US. They're Zambians. They went to the US. They came back for a visit. They came in the hub where we were working from. And they spoke to the people there, and these guys have registered themselves as a name called Zenga. So Zenga Capital, they decided to invest their money in those two small businesses. And one of them, I must say, closed, and the other one has remained growing. Now, the closing issue is a very normal thing. As you know, the statistics in the U.S. are saying that out of 10 small businesses, 9 will fail. Now, that is the U.S. That is the U.S. with all the knowledge and with all the technology and all the resources of understanding. What about Zambia? You're going to expect that out of 200, some at least 199 must fail, one must work. But who is going to put that level of confidence in the 199 so that we can find that very one that is going to work? That is not happening. So that is hampered a lot of things. So I would like to say yes. Dr. Elliot, we are available for investment as IMSICA, firstly, and secondly, I would like to open up the rest of the other people I know for those who may be interested in other forms of businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. I like this pastor, Roger. I like this pastor.
Yeah, so we have work to do. If we don't have the money, I'm sure we have friends, lawyers there. We should be saying, hey, I was cornered, Gilbert, one time by a lawyer friend. He said, what do you want me to do in your country? I don't know why.
You answer, Mr. Charlie, for having nothing to say to that lawyer? When there are thousands of small SMEs here that would have needed that support. But let's talk after this. I think let's have a conversation on how that could look like, so that, you know, there's so many things that come around. Yes.
We begin to Next week, I don't know, according to our plans, we might go political, Young and now Movita now, and Anthony, where they are from UPND, will be joining the discussion here, Nathan.
Okay.
I'm not sure what you have lined up for...
A small discussion of an NGO which will be feeding people in a part of Zambia. They have some work going on.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to be talking about.
With
somebody who's, we may consider to be a founding member, who was at the beginning of the start of this show. So she's coming back to discuss some things, and we're looking forward to that discussion. Gilbert, you are the type of pastor the country needs. I'm sending you my seed offering to say thank you for being what you are. So we need more pastors like Gilbert, eh?
Absolutely.
I'm going to get in trouble for this, I know.
Thank you very much.
Don't get me started.
Yeah. And our people in the chat room, Ms. Patricia, Ms. Chipo, Kelly Developer. Who is Kelly Developer? This number gets coming up. So join us every week. This is the number, those who are following us online. And don't remain in Egypt. Cross with us to Israel, as it were. Zoom, the number again I'll give you. Write it down if you don't want the link, if you don't want to be seen. You just want to call by phone. It's 1-929-205-6099. And then the ID is 319-527-6219. We need our family from the radio broadcast, Nathan, to come with us. We've come a long, long, long way.
Yes. And please like our Facebook page, Zambia Block Talk Radio,
exactly,
for all notifications, information, and updates. We are also on Twitter, Zambia Block Radio. And like our YouTube page, ZBTR TV. So please do that. Join us. We're looking forward to having you guys. And we appreciate everybody sharing, reposting, and everything we are doing. The numbers are going up. We do appreciate that. So let's keep this thing going. Please stop flunking within the borders of Zambia or wherever you are. The world is no longer the population of the country you live in. Like my sister Chi was saying in the UK.
Oh, even you who is from there, you are hesitating to pronounce her name.
No, it's because of my Texas accent. That's the problem I'm having.
Yeah.
Biggest economic block. Yes, I told her that we need her to come on here and talk about some things and stuff. You know, there are two people that I get excited about, smart Tumbuka woman and the smart pastor.
So everyone, thank you so much for joining us this weekend, Tiniso, stepping up in a big way. I'm sure you'll be advising us in this digital world. Pushing, you have anything you want to share, 5 minutes, any given Saturday, feel free. As they say, when people are talking like that, then there is a lot of food in the house. This is your house.
Exactly.
But if there is no house,
we see you.
Yeah. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.